Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com, and I'm joined by Ben, the man of many beards, Bolin. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing well. And, you know, Scott, I'm a kind of a humble guy, so let's play down my various world records for facial hair.
Okay. No, it's just always changing, that's all.
It's always changing. It's always changing. That's why we call you Scott Switch 'em Up Benjamin, right?
I've never heard that one. Okay. All right. We'll work on these, I promise.
We'll work on these.
Yeah, they've gone away for a while, so I thought I'd bring one back, but that's kind of long anyways. We need to stick to things like oil can and things like that that we had before.
Pork chop to do.
Pork chop, yeah, that's a good one. I like
Roundhouse.
That. Roundhouse.
That's one of yours, actually.
That's fantastic. Is it really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I remember that. Yeah, okay, that's good. That's very good.
All right. Scott Roundhouse Benjamin.
Yeah.
What's going on today?
Today, I want to talk about something that's coming up in the month of May. This is one of my favorite racing events absolutely of all time. The Indianapolis 500.
Okay. Not that time in May where you typically go and try to taunt someone into chasing you.
No. Nothing like that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, good. Then neither do I. We are recording, aren't we?
Is this some kind of strange? Is this like Georgia custom of some kind?
Yeah. Oh,
really?
Yeah.
I'm just not familiar.
You didn't get the pamphlet?
No, I did not.
Okay. Well, today we'll do Indy 500.
My favorite tradition of May is the Indianapolis 500. And we got a ton of information about it. I promise I won't bore you with all of this, because I've got it looks like a small phone book in front of me of information here. All kinds of stats, all kinds of figures and things like that we don't really need to go into, but we can just discuss the race in general. Mm. It isn't necessarily just to talk about the track itself or just the event itself or just the ceremony that happens around it. It's really all of that combined. We'll just talk about a little bit of everything just to kind of whet your appetite for the race that's coming up at the end of May.
And one of the reasons we're taking this approach, as any of our listeners probably know, there's so much stuff on the Indy 500 that we could almost do a series of podcasts on it.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, yeah. Is it the longest running race in the United States? I believe it is.
I believe it is.
I think it is, yeah. I remember when we were doing our Pikes Peak podcast, there was something about it being the second longest, and I think it was surpassed only by the Indianapolis 500.
And this is the race that we have received email about before. Every time we do a racing podcast, mm-hmm. we get a little feedback that says, hey, guys, come on, mm-hmm. what about the Indy 500?
Yeah, and trust me, I cannot forget about it. This is one that's close to me. I like this one a lot. I think it's 3 or 4 years. I was young at the time. I spent 3 or 4 years living in Indianapolis, right around the late 70s, early 80s. Might have been as late as 1980 to 83. I just don't remember. But the late 70s, early 80s, that's when I spent a lot of time at the racetrack. And, you know, I'd spend the full month of May there. My parents would take me out of school. It was common at the time, and I don't know if it still is or not, but, you know, if there's not an important qualifying day, but, you know, something that I was really into it anyways. And my dad worked there. He worked for ABC. He was a director at the time, local affiliate. So he was in, you know, the television truck in the back, and I got to go up where the cameras were and everything.
Really?
So it was a legitimate excuse for me to go and, you know, kind of learn what my dad does at work at the track, which is really cool. It's kind of a behind-the-scenes look, too.
That's awesome.
So I spent a lot of time there, and pretty much the full month of May. One thing, though, Ben, I've never, ever been to the race, the actual race.
Wow.
I know.
That's kind of crazy.
I know. You think I'd go. My mom and my brothers go a lot, often, still, even now. And I have never, ever attended the race. I've been at everything except the race many, many times.
You understand that's sort of bizarre, right?
Yeah, I know.
Well, I'm sorry, man.
No,
but
no,
hey,
it's okay.
You're a young guy.
I know. I
could
get
there. You can
make it. I could get there. That's
you could
fun.
Get there.
Yeah.
So, wait, people who don't know about this, which again is, I would say, safely say, the biggest race in America.
You know what? I think so. I mean, I know that anybody who's a NASCAR fan is going to say, wait a minute, the Daytona 500.
Yeah.
Then anybody who's a Formula One, who cares, Formula One. Oh, go ahead.
Well, okay. No, you're right, Scott. You're right. When I guess what I should say is, the longest running established race, mm-hmm. if we want to be technical about it. Because you're right, the NASCAR fans would definitely object. And, you know, I'm from Tennessee, so mm-hmm. I don't want to get in trouble by saying anything bad about NASCAR.
And then, of course, you know, there's drag racing. There's a ton of different series that people would say this is the greatest event. So, but it is called, is it the greatest spectacle in racing, I believe is what it's called.
Yep, that's the tagline.
So there you go. We'll just leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that.
I'm personally an open wheel fan, and that's because of my, I guess, the influence that I had early in my life at the track. At the 500 track. So I have, like I said, personal interest in this race.
Now, we need to, before we go any further,
yep.
Just explain real quick two things. First off, you could probably draw from the name. It's called the Indianapolis 500 in part because it's based in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. But where does the 500 come from?
500 miles. 500 miles of racing. And it's 200 laps because the track itself, it's a huge track. It's 2.5 miles around. Enormous track. In fact, it's so big there's a golf course in the middle of it. There's a museum in the middle of it. That's where they do a lot of the parking. There's grandstands in the middle. The pits are in the, not the pits, the gasoline alley, which is where the garage area is in the middle, of course. It's an enormous track. If you're walking end to end, you quickly feel how long this track is, how big it is.
Did you do that? Did you walk in?
Oh, many times, yeah. Many
wow.
times. They do a lot of events too where you can, run or walk around the track on, off days and
sure.
They have mini marathon type things happening there. There's a lot of events going on in May.
So the second question then, probably you piqued some interest when you said open wheel fan.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
what's
well,
the,
we're talking about IRL cars, the type of cars where they have the wide slicks on the four corners, which are exposed, completely exposed. No fenders covering them. You've all seen Indy cars, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Look like, in a way, Formula One. I'm hesitant to say that because they're dramatically different cars, but they appear that way. They're open wheel. For that reason, there's not a lot of bumping or rubbing like there would be in NASCAR, stock car
mm-hmm.
racing. It's much more dangerous to make contact or even impossible to make contact without causing some kind of damage.
Where do you want to go first? What do you want to do first?
There is a ton of information here. Really, there is. Well, let's see. I guess we could talk about, first of all, they're having some important dates coming up here, and I think maybe we should get into that first just so we don't ignore them. But there's some centennial dates coming up because this is a long-time running course. Now, what's weird about this is that – long-time running race, rather. What's weird about this is that the centennial dates don't all happen at once, and that's because of the war years. The war years is
right.
when the track took a break from action. Rather, the sanctioning body took a break from running the race during the war years. Now, this includes this goes all the way back to World War I. So during World War I, the races were suspended. So let's see, we've got and one that's already passed was the anniversary of the actual speedway itself, because March 20th, 2009 marked the 100th anniversary of the speedway. So that was when it was founded, when they decided we're going to build a speedway on this 328 acres of property in mm-hmm. nowhere in Indianapolis right now because it was farmland at the time.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Let's see. On August 19th of 2009, they passed another 100th anniversary, which was the first auto race to be held at the speedway, because they had a race obviously August 19th in 1909. So that's again that's the second 100th anniversary. The next one that's coming up right now, this year, is the 100th anniversary of the first 500-mile race at the Speedway, though. I'm sorry, next year would be that. I goofed that up.
Next year, 2011?
Next year, 2011, yeah. So May 30th, 2011 will be the 100th anniversary of the first 500-mile race. So the first one was run in 1911. Mm-hmm. And then the actual 100th running of the 500 won't come around until 2016. So that's because of the war years we talked about. Now, World War
I
and World War II, they took a few years in order to let that happen. And that kind of led to some pivotal moments in the track history, I guess. We could talk about those if you want to.
Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned, during the war, they took a break, during both wars, during World War I and World War II.
Right.
So there were no races in 1917 or 1918 for World War I.
Okay.
And 1916 was actually a shortened race. I think they ran 300 miles. That's because they thought the track owners thought that there might be less participation, less interest in something like that because we're kind of building up to that point and, it was just a downtime. And in 1942 to 1945, there were also no races. And I believe, if I'm thinking of this right, I think I read somewhere that it was an airplane repair
Landing?
Station. No,
oh,
a repair
okay.
station or something like that, a mechanics area. And the track went into just terrible condition at that point. Weeds were growing through the bricks. It was really, really bad situation for the track, and it was purchased then by the current owner, the Hallmans. So the track is now owned by the Hallman George family, which well, they currently own it. They're the ones who preside over the track, and that's the people that have been in charge since basically the 40s, I believe.
That's amazing. They're almost like racing royalty.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's get into the track specifically. You want to?
Yeah, sure. I've got, like I said, I got a lot of paper shuffling to go through here. But what do you want to hit me with?
I want to pick your brains about actually. Let's see where you want to go. You want to talk about the cars, like the pace cars?
Sure. Let's talk about the pace cars because you know what? Actually, this year we should talk about the pace car this year because that's of interest right now.
Yeah.
The pace car this year is going to be a 2010 Chevrolet Camaro SS, which is of course a special package you know that they offer for the pace car. It's orange with white stripes, which is kind of a nod to the 1969 pace car, which was also a Camaro. Now, that one had the reverse paint job. It had the white with orange stripes. This one has orange with white stripes. This will be the sixth time for a Camaro to pace the 500. So that's pretty significant right there. And I think they said that Edmunds mentioned that there might only be about 200 copies available because they make a limited number of the pace cars. For public use. You can buy these and drive them on the road.
Wow.
Because there's not particularly anything different about the pace car versus a street car other than like the strobe lights and things like that that they do allow at the track and not on the street. It's not like this one has a different engine. This one doesn't have any different suspension setup. It's the stock car that they're using for the pace car.
In terms of performance,
Same. Yeah, that's right. Now, there are a few differences. I mean, it's decals and badges and stitching in the headrests and new floor mats and things like that. Now, there is a custom grille, and there are different color taillights. Now, there's amber taillights on this one. I don't know if the street car will have amber taillights or not. Hmm. It may have red. But it also has an interior light bar on the pace car itself, the real pace car, and, of course, the strobe lights we mentioned. So, I don't know. I thought that was pretty interesting. And the stripes on the you know what they did, Ben? They finally did the stripes right on the pace car. They go all the way to the ground. I remember seeing this on a lot of cars recently. Do you like racing stripes?
Yes.
I do, too. I think they make any car look better, practically.
They do. They're pretty cool.
That's my opinion. I love racing stripes. But they've done the stripes right on this one in that they go all the way to the ground on the front. They don't end on the hood, or they don't end like midway on the front bumper or something.
See, that's my thing. It's not even a stripe at this point. It's part of a lie.
Yeah, that's right.
It didn't get finished, you know, unless it goes all the way down.
But now on the back, it doesn't go all the way to the ground only because there's actually a really cool-looking diffuser at the back of the car. Mm-hmm. That it doesn't cover because that's a different, you know, it's like a composite material.
Right.
And it doesn't go over that. But it'd be cool if it could, but it doesn't. It does go to the front. And, of course, now this is what's really cool. I selected an interior photo of this thing. The stripes continue on the paint on the dash inside the car.
Oh, that is pretty cool.
Which is pretty neat.
That's
pretty neat. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So they come right into the interior, which I think is, you know.
Oh, you got me. You got me on that one.
Which is pretty awesome. So there's a few that I want to point out here. We've got a long list of pace cars. I'm not going to go through all of them, of course. But I mean, when you look at them, the drivers are always somebody significant in some way. I mean, it was the track owner, Carl Fisher, you know, for the first, looks like, 5 or 6 years here in a row. Then there's Barney Oldfield, which was he was a racer at the time. Duesenberg drove a Duesenberg in 1923 for this pace car. let's see, Eddie Rickenbacker drove a Rickenbacker 8 in 1925. And Rickenbacker, he was also an owner of the track. Famous World War I flying ace, Eddie Rickenbacker, also fantastic race driver. Edsel Ford drove a Lincoln in 1932. As a pace car. There's some cars in here that you wouldn't expect either. Now, this is one that you would expect. I'm sorry, before we get that far. A 64 Ford Mustang. So that was the first year of the Mustang. Of course,
that's
going to be the pace car. Challenger, which was driven by Eldon Palmer in 1971. If you recall, that's the one that we talked about that had the accident at the end of pit lane.
Yes.
The dealer that kind of slid into the photography stand, I believe it was.
Unfortunately.
So that's why I marked 1971 here as an important one.
Right.
But now some of the cars that you wouldn't expect, there are things like the Chrysler LeBaron that was driven by Carroll Shelby in 87. Let's see, going way back to 1977, there was an Oldsmobile Delta 88 that was driven by James Garner.
Huh.
Which is kind of interesting, I thought.
Yeah,
he came back to drive again a few years later, another Oldsmobile. He drove a Calais as a pace car. And there's unusual vehicles like this. Now, one strange one, of course, there's Corvette. Corvette started in 1978. That's the first Corvette pace car. They were built from 1953, of course, until the present.
Just couldn't get in there.
Didn't get in there until 1978, and Jim Rathman drove that one. And since then, I believe that it has been, I don't have the stats on the number, but Chevrolet has been driven 21 times now at this point as a pace car in
the
history.
They're running it.
Yeah, they have. Like. Yeah, that's the top. And then that's followed by Oldsmobile with 11, mm-hmm. and then... I think that's about the only other notable. There's a few that are, you know, duplicates, but not many.
Oldsmobiles are one of my favorite cars, man.
Really?
My first car was an Oldsmobile.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
What was it?
It was an Oldsmobile Achieva.
Okay.
My favorite of the Oldsmobile.
I know that car well. Family. Yeah, with the pointed front end. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I sure knew how to wreck it. But moving on.
Yeah, but there's some cool ones, and I mean we'll let this go after this. But I mean there's a Dodge Viper, the V10, you know, which was just stellar at the time, you know, that was brand new. That's really cool. Carroll Shelby, of course, driving that. Ford Mustang Cobras, of course, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the Pontiac Fiero. Do you remember that? The Pontiac Fiero and the pace car version. That was the year that the Fiero came out, I believe. It was in '84.
I did not know that was a pace car.
That was, I tell you, I was in town. I was there when that was being released because it was early in the spring before I had left town. So I moved to Detroit in '84, and I was still there. During the month of May for this is my last race there that I lived there. And I tell you, that Fiero was really, at the time, one of the coolest things around. I mean, you couldn't believe this car that you saw in front of you.
You're going to have to see the Indy 500 at some point, Scott.
I know I am. But
Yeah.
And a Monte Carlo that was driven by Jay Leno.
Oh, go team.
I had to mention it. 1999 Monte Carlo driven by Jay Leno. So
I had a... Before my current Monte Carlo, I had a 99 Monte Carlo.
Did you?
Wait. No, I didn't. I wish I did. Yeah. I think I had a 98. but also, our listeners who, if you guys are interested in pace cars, you'll probably enjoy a podcast that you and I did earlier, right, Scott? On pace cars.
Yeah, we did. We had a pace car mm-hmm. episode, which was a lot of fun to do. We had a lot of other examples in that one, too. Mm-hmm. So worth talking about or worth listening to.
What other milestones are there?
Oh, man, let's see. We've got a lot of milestones, actually. I mean, there's a whole list. If you go to, I think it's Indianapolis. Hang on one second. I'm shuffling my notes again. But I think it's IndianapolisMotorSpeedway.com. You'll be able to find a lot of this information that I found for today.
Okay. So IndianapolisMotorSpeedway.com.
Correct, yeah. And I'm sorry I scrambled for my notes there, but I got it. And there's a ton of milestones that are listed, and I'm just going to mention a few here. But the most victories. Now, they're, you know, the repeat, you know, three-peat, whatever you want to call it.
Three-peat.
There are four winners that have four wins in Indianapolis, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it, winning the Indianapolis 500 four times.
Yeah. Are they consecutive?
They can't all
be consecutive wins.
No. You know what? There are three winners that have won four times in a row. I'm sorry. I misspoke. Wow. So three winners that have won four times, not consecutive.
Okay.
Some of the years are consecutive. We won't go through which are consecutive and which are not, because that's a whole different stat. Mm-hmm. There's stats for everything on this website. It's really a pretty good site. But A.J. Foyt, Al Unser, and Rick Mears have won each one the race four times. That means their faces on the trophy four times.
And if you ever see someone who's won that many races on the interstate, just go ahead and get over in the right
just
lane.
Just let them go, because they're probably pretty good drivers. Mm-hmm. Interesting enough, the lowest starting position who has also been the winner, it's happened twice. Happened twice in history. Someone has come from 28th position up to number one. And the first one we'll talk about in a minute. The second one was Lewis Meyer in 1936. The first one was the very first race in 1911. Ray Haroon, who drove to victory in the 1911 Indianapolis 500, went from 28th position all the way up to first place. And that's, other than Lewis Meyer in 1936, that's been unmatched ever since.
That's a long time.
Yeah, that is a long time. Closest margin of victory, 43 thousandths of a second, which was in, Al Unser Jr. over Scott Goodyear in 1992. Incredibly close finish. If you ever get a chance, 43 thousandths of a second. Yes, and it's really photo finish. If you get a chance, look it up online. Take a look at the photograph. You won't believe how close they are. But you get more of an idea of this if you watch the video of the race and you see how quickly they cross the line, because the still photo, you know, they're mm-hmm. a few feet apart or whatever.
Sure.
But When you get an idea of the speed that they're traveling, then you realize 43/1000ths of a second is just, it's unbelievably close.
That's
especially in a 500-mile race that lasts, you know, several hours, and it comes down to that.
What can I say, man? I'm just so impressed that they can differentiate at that level.
Yeah, it's an interesting. I mean, it's got a lot of there's a lot of history to it. There's a lot of fanfare and a lot of ceremony that goes along with the race.
Right.
The month of May is just all about. It's all about practice. It's all about qualifying. It's all about pit competitions. It's about carburation days. It's about museum tours and just everything about it. I mean, even the open ceremony to the race where Jim Nabors sings "Back Home Again" in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
There's a military flyover before the race. They release balloons. It's really, really a cool thing. And they have a band that walks around and plays bagpipes the whole time, a Scottish band that walks around. I know it sounds kind of corny, but it's
wait,
really...
Wait, the whole time?
Yeah. Yeah, not through the whole race, during the whole month of May, though. You'll find them there all the time. It's really interesting. It's cool.
I can't let you wrap up without talking about the trophy.
The trophy. All right, let's get to the trophy. It's called the BorgWarner Trophy. And the reason it's called the BorgWarner Trophy is because that was the... it was an automotive company, which... it's still around. They commissioned the trophy to be built in 1935, and they had a budget, or they wanted it to cost around $10,000, and that's what they built it for. But these they contacted these I think were they silversmiths? I think they were silversmiths, because the thing is made out of sterling silver. This trophy is, and it's over 5 feet tall at this point because they keep adding to it.
So it's pretty heavy.
It's a heavy trophy. It's let me look here. It's 5 feet 4¾ inches with the base, and it's approximately 110 pounds, and that's silver. The thing's valued somewhere over $1 million, but then again, you can't place a value on this history.
No.
So it was built in 1935. It wasn't unveiled until 1936. Eddie Rickenbacker, he actually unveiled the trophy and declared it as the prize for the 500 victor at that point. And they went ahead and went back to 1911 and carved every face of every winner into the trophy in a small plate. There's a square that each winner receives on the trophy, and they add to that every year. So, at this point, they've begun adding sections in order to fit all the drivers
faces,
on because, I guess who knew it would last this long. So
right.
In the last driver, I thought this was kind of interesting. The last driver, I'm reading from the page here. The last driver to have his likeliness placed on the original trophy was Bobby Rahal in 1986 because, every square was filled at that point. And a new base was added in 1987, and it was filled to capacity following the 2000 win by Jill DeFerrin. So for 2004, BorgWarner again commissioned another base that was supposedly won't be filled to capacity until 2034. So in 2034, or 2035, they're going to have to build a new base for this thing because it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
If they keep just adding bases, Scott, it's going to turn into a pyramid.
Yeah.
A little silver at the capstone.
Yeah, I know. It's a really cool looking trophy, though. It's very unique. You've probably seen it in the Victory Circle, when they're drinking the quart of milk that they drink every time. See, more ceremony.
Yeah.
Tradition.
You should mention that one. That one's one of the weirdest.
They usually place a wreath around them, too. Something that, I don't know who sponsors the wreath. I can't remember. But there's a wreath that they place around their neck. It's an interesting race. It's really, really cool to look at everything that they do, that they have done for, decades. Decades, yeah. Exactly.
And it's coming up, which is the whole reason we're letting you guys know about this. I think we're doing a pretty good overview.
Yeah, like I said, I've got so much information about this. Any of these little pieces that we're talking about, we could probably do a whole podcast on them. And I'm sorry if I've gone off on tangents or whatever, but I mean, I've got more than half my stack here left that we haven't even touched we won't get into right now, but maybe we'll save it for another individual podcast.
This is all iceberg tips, you guys. We're in an iceberg tip podcast.
I know. I feel like this is one of those things, Ben. I feel like I could talk about it all day because it's fun, but I know that wouldn't be too interesting. So we're gonna just wrap it up with, I guess, this year's race date.
And maybe
because I don't know. It's May 30th of this year. And it's always run right around Memorial Day, so that happens to fall on Memorial Day this year. And that's it. I mean,
and you should go check it out. And you know what, you guys, Scott, I'm going to say it again. I'm going to reiterate: you can't keep avoiding the race, man.
It's not that I'm avoiding it. I just I've had opportunities to go and other things have come up. I've either been traveling somewhere else, something else was happening at home that I couldn't go. Just hasn't worked out. But
or you were in a car chase at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I would even, you know, I love the place so much, I would even, you know, I'd enjoy going there for the Formula One races that they had there, or the motorcycle races that they have there, or anything, the stock car races even. But again, I'm an Indy 500 fan through and through, so this is my race. I need to go.
Born and bred Indy 500 fan.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, as always, thanks for listening. We hope that you've enjoyed our frenetic overview of a lot of the things going on with the Indy 500. And, of course, we hope that you can show up because, Scott, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it.
I'm at least going to watch on television.
That's the least we can
at
do.
At least. You know, what's really good? If you're able, listen on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it sounds corny, but I grew up listening to it on the radio. That's the way to do it.
It's classic.
It is.
It's classic, especially the announcers are good. In the meantime, if you want to impress any of your friends that you'll be watching the show with or listening to the show with, then one of the best things you could do is log on to our website and check out the wealth of information we have about the Indy 500.
Good idea.
Oh, right. And this is the part where we say goodbye and tell you to send us an email.
Oh, yeah. At highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the howstuffworks.com homepage.